I'm Dr. Rose Aslan, and I'm a transformational life coach, breathwork teacher, and scholar of religion who supports helpers, rebels, misfits, marginalized, and spiritual and spiritually curious folks. Welcome to Rahma with Rose, where I create a bold space of warmth, understanding, and pluralism in a world that often feels chaotic, polarized, and judgmental. You are not alone, and the stories I share here will reinforce this. Each episode will delve into inspiring stories, practical tips, and thought-provoking and heartfelt conversations with thought leaders, healers, coaches, mental health professionals, and other individuals who are part of the quiet revolution of women healing around the world. So join me on this podcast exploration as we explore what happens when we allow compassion into our lives, one story at a time. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Today, we're joined by a wonderful guest all the way in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, Dr. Salaha Farid Abdul Khalik. She is passionate about philosophy, self-knowledge, actualization, spirituality, and music. She has a PhD in Islamic studies from the University of Exeter in the UK, and she is currently running her own online existential life coaching business. She is currently studying various modalities of therapy and is creating music. So welcome to Rahma with Rose, Salaha. It's wonderful to have you here.
Thank you, Rose. Thank you for having me.
So wonderful. And I wanted to share with the listeners how we met, because it's a really interesting and random way. So I think it was 3 years ago, perhaps more than 3 years ago. I remember it was in the winter of 2021, in the early part of 2021, when I was about to become a life coach, but I hadn't become one yet. And I wanted to see who else is out there doing this from a Muslim perspective. So I went on LinkedIn searching for various keywords of Muslim life coach and whatever else, Sufism, other terms. And you were like the only person who came up. No one else on LinkedIn seemed to have identified as a Muslim life coach, at least people who I resonate with. You were the only one. And then I remember I reached out to you on LinkedIn, which I'm not a big active user of LinkedIn, but I reached out to you, you responded. I remember speaking to you about your experience coaching, and we had just a nice connection. And we might have connected another time after that. But what is even more amazing and an act of synchronicity is that shortly after that, you said, okay, I'm moving to Istanbul. And I was like, wow, that's amazing, because we had this beautiful connection when we spoke. And then you moved to Istanbul at the end of that year, if I believe correctly. And it was wonderful that we had you for about a year in Istanbul. And it was so great to spend time with you and to get to know you and have you as a sister in Istanbul. Unfortunately, you left to Kuala Lumpur, fortunately for you in Kuala Lumpur, but because of technology, we can still connect. And you were one of the very first women I wanted to reach out to and let others hear your story. So I'm really excited for this, your story to go out there, for people to hear how someone like you navigates spirituality, healing, Sufism, Islam.
Thank you, Rose, for the introduction. Yes, it was a very interesting way of meeting, because I'm also not very active on LinkedIn. So that was very random. And then we ended up living also quite close to each other in Istanbul. So it was amazing also to have you there.
Exactly. And Istanbul does attract a lot of women on the healing path. So it was really beautiful that we could connect in that way and with other women in this path. And Salaha also gave a couple of sessions in our Rahma circle, a healing circle for women, on Ibn al-Arabi, on fasting and worship. And everyone was completely blown away by the knowledge and depth of the embodied approach you offered to Ibn Arabi and understanding Islamic rituals. So I still, when I think of those sessions, I'm still like get chills down my back from how amazing it was to study Ibn Arabi with you specifically. So let's go back to when you were younger. And can you remember perhaps when you're a child or young woman, when you first started getting interested in spirituality and healing, and if they came together or separately in your life?
I think I've always been quite inclined to spirituality. I grew up in a Muslim household, so there was I was introduced already to like religion and practice at a very young age. But I was also very attracted to it. I think it came very naturally somehow. And there was always a longing. I felt I had a longing since I was a child. It was something in me. And because the environment I grew up in was more politicized, it wasn't very spiritual. It was more like concerned with maybe the outward practices and rituals and very cultural. I felt that something was missing for me. And that kind of prompted me to on my spiritual quest or like to look further because of that thirst, something to quench that spiritual thirst. So I started looking, I think, when I was quite young. I was very interested in questions of like why we're here, and searching for meaning. So I also ended up studying philosophy at university because of that longing. But I think my spiritual quest also already started when I was in my teenage years. And I was looking for something, but that wasn't a child anymore. But I think I was already inclined as a child.
Great. It's not often, and a lot of young people live their lives in normal ways, but why do you think you're motivated to explore the meaning of life, the purpose of life, existential issues when you're so young?
I think it was something internal. Like I felt, as I said, like a longing, something tugging at my soul. Like it was, it's like I couldn't rest. So I felt like I had no choice because of this restlessness inside, this like yearning, this searching. That led me to start reading different also religions because I was like, okay, maybe, you know, maybe Islam isn't for me. Maybe like, how do we know this is the truth? So I started questioning a lot of things because the environment didn't really provide much spirituality, like very basic spirituality. I think that drove me to read into other religions. And I got really interested in Hinduism. Started even reading the Bhagavad Gita when I was very young, maybe 19 years old or something. Mm-hmm. And into yoga during high school, I found this random book on our bookshelf. And it was on a Lebanese man who was in a wheelchair and couldn't walk until he started practicing yoga. And I was like really blown by this story. And it was a real story. So I started practicing yoga and I got into yoga. And then I started reading the scriptures, like Hindu scriptures. And then during university, I came across an introduction to Sufism class. I think I felt like, wow, I found like the perspective on life that resonates to me the most. But I still couldn't, I didn't know how to access it, right? So I was looking. So I kept on looking.
Beautiful. And how would you describe the spiritual path you're on now if you had to give it words, which often is difficult to give this indescribable path words, but how would you make an attempt at that?
I think the spiritual path is really like a self-inquiry path, right? It's a journey to get to know yourself and your relationship to the existence, divine, the divine. I think they're actually separate. But so I'd say I'm on a journey of self-knowledge, and I don't think it ends at any point. So that's how my spiritual journey is, a journey of presence, I'd say.
And would you say it's rooted in Islam, or are you influenced by other spiritual traditions? How do you find structure and meaning in your specific path?
I definitely say it's rooted in Islam. I'm a practicing Muslim. I'm very inclined to Sufism. So I would say it's more or less a Sufi paradigm that I ascribe to, view the world through myself, through the divine. And I like the word that you use, structure, because I think that's very important. Because of also my background and my journey, obviously, I don't know if it's obvious, but I was also attracted to like new age spirituality. Like I wanted to explore it, but I think often that lacked also the structure and the rootedness of traditional religion. And that's why I find it very important to actually root yourself into that. Because traditional means just only that it was tried for so many years. So someone has already gone down this path like so many times for 1,000 years. It's tried and tested, right? For me, invent the wheel. Something sometimes wants to, or as a way of knowing. I think it's not necessarily a go. Sometimes it is a go away, but sometimes it's also maybe this isn't working for me. So let me think about something. I also think that the structure of consciousness is shared by all human beings. Traditional religion just gives you like a tried and tested method. It resonates with you, obviously. And why not?
I love your approach and understanding of tradition in a really positive light, because for many Muslims who are a little disillusioned by Islam and various Muslim movements, tradition has turned into quite a negative word. So I just love that as a tradition is something that it's a path that of people who've gone before you that you can learn from. How do you navigate that of some parts of tradition might not serve you or be suitable for you? And then how do you navigate between the tradition that is helpful and inspiring and parts of tradition that actually aren't?
So just to say something also on that previous point. So religion, like religious form, is like a container, right? So it's like navigating the container, so to speak, because there's God and then there's religion as the way to God, even though it won't be in distance, but we experience that anyway. It's a very good question you asked, and I think I suffered from that for a very long time as well myself. Making sense of religion, like that's what we're on, like that quest to make sense of religion, especially if you're born into one. Sense, and you want to make it yours. It has experiential, and I think the things I struggle with, I start to see now as, okay, I haven't really understood this yet. Maybe it will come at some point, and I can just be in conversation with this awkward aspect that I'm not comfortable with. And it doesn't have to be resolved today or tomorrow in 5 years, because that is the journey, is to reconcile yourself. Mm. I'm not automatically reconciled because of whatever my mizaj, my constitution, or my personality, or my upbringing, or my trauma. So I see it also as a journey of reconciliation with myself, because religion is nothing itself. As in, if we say, oh, I'm not reconciled with religion, I objectify religion, right? And it no longer is religion anymore, right? Because religion is not a thing, right? It's not a tangible thing.
Mashallah, sounds like you've really released a lot of, some people might say, anger or resentment around things that may have harmed you in the past. And I've noticed that when people are on this healing path, their relation to things that are harmful is very different, and that there's some things that just don't serve us, and there's other things that we just don't understand, and that eventually we will. And I just love to hear your approach, because I notice a lot of Muslims who are disillusioned have a really difficult time grappling with even reading the Quran or approaching a hadith, for example, and they don't know how to make sense of things that appear immediately misogynistic, for example. How do you do that? I'm curious, because so many Muslims I know literally have to stay away if they want to remain on this path or interpret them in radically different ways.
It's not been easy, I have to say this. It's been a very long process. And of course, I get triggered still. But it's important to see that your psychological state and for your spiritual state very often. So if I'm emotionally charged, because that means that something is not resolved, that has nothing to do with what I'm trying to do. If I'm trying to read the Quran, I feel so triggered. And a lot of things are coming up for me. It has nothing to do with Quran, it has something to do with my past, right? My triggers, my conditioning, whatever I went through. So that's very important, is to see the emotional life, the psychological life, and in relation to the spiritual life, and how it often gets in the thing. This differentiation is very important. I think it took me a very long time to understand that maybe I didn't have problems with Islam, but I had a lot of problems with my upbringing or the history or the cultural environment in Egypt where I grew up in, is to differentiate, or even my own personal issues with it, to be able to differentiate between the psychological realm and the spiritual realm and the relationship between them. So creating that distance is very important. And then the other thing is to start on that psychological healing journey, because it's very important, because it affects everything. It's like the glasses through which you view everything. So it's scratched, or they are distorted and everything, it's right.
What you said speaks so strongly to me, because I'm also a really big advocate for mental health and for Muslims learning to heal themselves, not just from religious and spiritual trauma, but also just from childhood trauma and whatever else troubles them in their lives. So I really appreciate you saying this. It's not just about religion. We need something much more beyond religion to work through and to find a more healing-centered approach to religion and spirituality. So I just love that you mentioned that, and that's why we're kindred souls. Salaha, because I know that you're an expert in Ibn al-Arabi, and I've benefited from your embodied teachings of Ibn al-Arabi, could you briefly share what was it like to do a PhD, as they call in the US, or in UK, a thesis? In the US, we call it a dissertation. What was it like to complete your thesis on such an intense spiritual figure? And tell us a little bit about how you bring Ibn al-Arabi's embodied teachings into your own life or into your teachings and work supporting others.
Thank you for that question. It was life-changing. I'm not exaggerating by saying that, actually. There's something very magical that happens when you're in contact with the teachings of Arabi, reading Ibn al-Arabi, the kind of state it puts you in, the kind of state that you have to strive for in order to access such a dense, deep text. It's very transformative for me. And as we were talking about, like, maybe being triggered by certain aspects of forbidden or not being fully reconciled. And I felt that through reading about it, I was reconciled to so many things because he offered a very deep cosmo-ontological paradigm that I think that's my tendency anyway, is to view the world through these lenses. And I think he offered me something so out of the box that it's so refreshing and it made so much sense. I think after also reading, being exposed to Hindu philosophies and Buddhist philosophies of non-duality, then to read in Arabi and his paradigm, it was very incredibly refreshing, very original, and it really resonated with me. But it wasn't an easy journey either. I think it really involved a lot of tears and a lot of fretting over the text and a lot of self-reflection and state spiritual states. I think I really got into all kinds of spiritual states reading the texts, and I felt that I had to be very centered in so many ways and very present with myself and present with God in order to really understand what he's saying. A beautiful journey, I think. The PhD was more of a personal journey than maybe a typical academic journey for me.
Can you give us a very short example of something that you said was pivotal and life-changing for you in his teachings that was fresh, and how did that change your perspective?
I think his accounts on like the esoteric meaning, the inner meaning, of prayer and fasting. Those were questions that were never answered for me. I used to ask, obviously, around as well, but I was never given like a satisfactory answer. So I've always also struggled with fasting. I practiced, so I used to fast every Ramadan. Something wasn't really aligned, it wasn't clicking. It was just like very difficult physically for me. And then it just put me in this frustrated mental state or psychological state. So Ramadan was like this heavy thing. I would dread it. I would be like, I don't know if I can do this every single year. I did it, alhamdulillah, but that's very heavy and I really struggled with it. But then when I started reading Ibn Arabi, and I made that intention, I was like, please God, make this abadah also a little bit like the ritual practice easier on me and give me the knowledge to understand why we're doing what we're doing. Because I'm also the kind of person who really struggles to do things they don't know the meaning behind them. I really struggle. And I often doubt or reject that. So it's not great, obviously, in terms of spiritual practice and to have also that aspect of your personality, but there can also be a drive to seek knowledge. When I started reading in the Futuhat, the Meccan Revelations, the chapter, I was writing already a chapter on that. So I started reading that chapter, the Futuhat al-Mekki, on fasting and how fasting was a manifestation of a certain divine name. And just like giving me this like ontocosmological perspective on a ritual practice and seeing like how we're embodying like the divine names through these. It was just, I don't know, something just happened. I felt like it was a huge blessing, alhamdulillah. And it was after this Ramadan, that particular Ramadan, when I was reading and writing that chapter on fasting, that revelation started to happen at a very deep level. And alhamdulillah, that was very transformative. And until today, alhamdulillah, like Ramadan is very different for me now.
Yeah, that's amazing. Thank you for sharing. And it's really interesting to hear how someone who's a little bit rebellious, who rejects things unless you really truly understand them, found meaning through the deep teachings of Ibn Arabi. And I'm looking forward to the time when you'll be making more of his teachings accessible to people, because he is a little bit difficult for a lot of people to access at this time. So I'm looking forward to that opportunity with you. Saleha, I know that currently you're studying some healing modalities and you've studied quite a few in the past. I'd love to hear about which ones you studied, which ones you've tried as in you've received from others, which ones resonated the most with you, which ones did you integrate, which ones did you just let go from your life? Yeah, I know that's a big question, but you can think of the main ones that really have had a big impact on you.
So I'll start with what I've tried, because when I realized that my spiritual like state was affected by my psychological state, obviously I had to tend to that psychological state just to be closer to God. It's because you can't be close to God if you're not close to yourself, if you aren't yourself. Too many veils in between. I don't know if I can share in a chronological order, but I'll tell you whatever comes to homeopathy. I think I started with homeopathy, and I tried talk therapy, so psychotherapy, Chinese medicine, acupuncture, somatic therapy at some point. I think they all served, and I think I saw the power of also psychotherapy and releasing emotions of telling a story and have someone compassionate, non-judgmental, offer a safe space and contain you to feel seen, recognized, and valued, and offer you that space to let go also. I've feel that you can't, unless it's like through a spiritual practice that there's, then you can take quantum leaps, which is possible, but I don't think that happens as often. That's why we need to take the stairs. For me, it was like taking the stairs, right, through the different modalities. I think talk therapy and somatic therapy were very powerful. They all were and are. But I think they're very subtle. I think Chinese medicine and homeopathy are very subtle. So it's very difficult. I don't want to say measure, but maybe in talk therapy, it's like more a little bit. So you can see also like the effects of that. So that inspired me also to go on that path to well-being psychology and study. So I did life coaching as part of a counseling degree, which I didn't end up finishing because of COVID. So I got certified as a life coach. And that was quite powerful as well. I didn't take life coaching seriously until I studied myself. I was always like, what is that exactly? So I think I didn't have respect for it because I didn't know what that was until I studied. And I saw also how powerful it was to undergo this journey myself and then offer this to other women. Yeah, that inspired me to study further. So I'm currently studying different modalities as part of talk therapy.
Which modalities?
So dialectical behavior therapy, cognitive behavior therapy, and all kinds. So there's the course that I'm in right now. It's a different modality every single month. And I started this course with Gabor Mate as well, compassion. That's more trauma-focused. I had to sit with someone who's been exposed to trauma and help them through self-knowledge. And it's almost like self-release, right? You're releasing yourself.
Yeah. You've been on this long adventure, it seems, and journey of discovering and trying out things and finding what works for you. Are there practices or modalities that you use in your everyday life? What's in your toolkit for supporting yourself, for keeping your nervous system regulated?
Movement is very important. So I studied yoga and I certified Jivananda Hatha Yoga School. So practicing yoga is very important, not because it's not just a body thing. It takes into consideration that you have a mind and a soul. So it's very holistic. And it involves a meditation and breathing exercise. The discovery of meditation for me is very powerful as well. So being with the names of God is very powerful. And doing sports for me, sports is very well. I love playing tennis or swimming. So just keeping yourself moving, I think it helps your emotions to move, thoughts to move, and everything to move. So it takes you out of this stagnant state.
I'm also all about the body and being embodied. So I love that you brought up the spiritual practices, things like yoga, but also tennis. You wouldn't think of it as a healing sport, but any kind of movement really is good for us and helps us get out of the stagnant, sedentary context often we're settled into. So I'm so glad you brought up just the things that people don't often think about as part of the healing journey.
I think sports also bring you to presence and think, what's healing? It doesn't matter what you're doing.
Yeah.
Things are easier to get you into the zone. Like, oh, if I'm playing tennis, I don't think about anything. It's just the ball and the other person's playing. Everything else vanishes. It's a mini annihilation experience. But you don't have a sense of self. I'm not a woman or a man. I'm not Muslim anymore. I'm not whatever. Like my age, I have no history when I'm just out of court. It's very liberating actually to be present. I think whatever brings you to this moment of presence, just, it's just you being there. With God, basically.
I need Finette in tennis. This sounds like the start of something, your memoir, maybe. I love it. You and I, and many people in the similar field, talk about this healing path, healing journey. How would you define it, just in general, for someone who's curious about it?
I think it's shedding the authentic layers of yourself so that you get to the core of yourself. For me, that is healing. It's to become yourself. Healing comes from like wholeness, right? So you become fully yourself.
Yeah. And how do you define spirituality? Can you tell I have an academic background? I love to hear how people define words that everyone's throwing around these days, but we all define them very differently. So what does spirituality mean to you, actually? We've spoken about it, but how would you describe it to someone else?
Well, that's a difficult question, I think, because we often we do things without putting names. It's a more, I guess, like spirit-focused living or spirit-focused consciousness, God consciousness. So how do you, spirituality maybe is the way for you to be God conscious in your everyday life.
Beautiful. And could I ask you about Sufism? Because I know that you're really inspired in your life through Sufism and the teachings of Sufi teachers. Could you tell us how that plays out in your life, how that helps you walk this path?
I think the sense of community, finding like-minded, you see the world and God and themselves and their place in the universe in similar So having this community is very important, not to walk the path on your own. Thing that gives me support the most. You don't have to do it alone. And it's also difficult with other people, but it makes it just slightly a little bit more bearable, companionship. I think that's the biggest blessing for me on this path, is to have like-minded people with me, and then to have teachers who've also gone through the same process and are there to help you, lend a helping hand, guide you, support.
Yeah. Beautiful, thank you. And as we wrap up, I would love to know what pearls of wisdom you would like to share with people listening to this episode. Is there like one deep lesson that you have learned and has really sunk into your being that has served you well on this path of healing and growth?
I think that relaxation is very important. God in the Quran talks about like the self that is at peace, is tranquil, at peace with itself, right? And you can't really know God or navigate the world and have an objective, I think, sense of reality if your nervous system is wired up. So I think that was a big lesson as well, is that you're closer to the truth when you are to seek.
That just sent shivers down me when you said that last sentence. Yeah,
so that would be like something to share with people, is just obviously within the framework of divinity and conscious religion or whatever.
Regulate your nervous system so that you can enjoy things that might seem difficult, or they might be beautiful but sometimes inaccessible. But first the body and the nervous system, quiet the mind.
Helps you also see things as they are. And because we were maybe full circle to going back to the difficult questions, when we're triggered, how do we approach even scriptures or religion or ritual practices? If you calm yourself down, is this as a habit, is to know that you're far from your truth. Actually, when you are wired up, when you're triggered. So don't make judgments in that state as well, because you're not yourself. So being yourself is very important as well. And the self, I don't mean the ego self at all. The other thing, big lesson, is from Ibn Arabi, is that there is no truth save God. And I think that this paradigm makes things, just put things into perspective for me. Because whatever happens is also the decree of God. There is no doer except God. So it helps you to surrender, and it helps you let go. You just do your part and then you just relax again. So I think surrendering and relaxing, they come together.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
Surrendering, relaxing, trusting, they all come together. That's what I would share.
Relax and trust. Yes. It sounds so easy, right? Yet why is it so hard? Same time.
Yeah. It's also histories, I think, because we all come from histories, and then we misidentify ourselves as well, because we mistake our mind for the self. I think that's the biggest blockages on the path, is sort of the mind and the self-images that we entertain to live up to, or were projected on us.
Yeah.
In the way or not. So kind of removing that, or just stilling the mind, just being in your center, but then you can really know yourself, know God.
Yeah. Saleha, it's been amazing to have you here, and I'm sure the other people listening are really going to feel inspired and uplifted. And just, we always need these reminders, and you just gave us so many good reminders about the simplicity of this path and how we can navigate it in community and with really simple concepts like trust, surrender, relaxation. So I'm really grateful to you for coming on and sharing your story with others. So Jazakum Allah khairan.
Thank you so much. This was wonderful.
Are you looking for help bringing more compassion into your life and letting yourself out of the box and into the real you? I'd love to support you on your journey. Check out my one-on-one and group coaching offers and sign up for my mailing list to receive updates about my offers. Follow me on Instagram and Facebook under Dr. Rose Aslan Coaching, or visit my website, compassionflow.com.